Hi, honey. I'm home. What's for dinner?
Check out these cool space packet foods we have. Aren't they awesome? You just peel them open and it immediately heats up automatically.
Excellent. Huh, I wonder what's in this one. That smells good. Oh, it's so relaxing on this nice, uninhabited planet for some relaxation.
It was nice of the captain to let us off for some R&R, but I don't think this place is uninhabited. I was down at the beach today, and there was... I thought they were beach balls, right? And then, like, I noticed one of them had feet, and it appeared to be following me.
Oh, that's interesting. I should go check that out later. I didn't know there was any life forms on this planet. I thought it was just trees and bushes and everything else. They said it was unstable, but I don't think it's going to be exploding anytime soon.
Are you sure? Because you never know when, like, some hippies from the 1970s could, like, wander by. And you know those guys. They're unstable themselves.
Yeah. Yeah, I highly doubt somebody's just going to, you know, come here and blow up the planet.
Lock gravity system.
Gravity lock. Activate after upper. Activate energy shield. Energy shield. We activate gravity lock.
Confirm.
Power gravity system activated. Roger, track.
Lock all the windows.
The planet just exploded, sir.
What if music could open visions of the future? What if a mysterious melody drove an entire world mad? What if the greatest composer in history had alien inspiration? Listen to Theme and Variations, a podcast anthology of new speculative fiction stories, and hear what happens when the music you love becomes something very different. Theme and Variations, a podcast anthology edited by Michelle M. Welch. Find us at themeandvariationsanthology.com.
Lions and tigers and...
The deadpan.
Oh my!
Lions and tigers and...
The deadpan.
Oh my!
I got the drink, I got the rum and coke, I got the Taco Bell, I got the dark stuff, I got the Sunday night.
Zardoz, Repo Man, Southland Tales, Gross Point Blank, Watchmen, Flash Gordon, The Wall, sort of, and now Dark Star. Hey, and welcome to Deadpan number 177. I'm your host, Jack Mangan, a.k.a. Bomb number 21. And wait a minute. Anyway, we are talking about probably the weirdest, and that's really saying something considering what we've covered so far on Deadpan, you know, including Zardoz and... actually, you know what? Zardoz is the weirdest. But this is actually from right around the same time period as Zardoz. This is early 70s. Weird, weird, trippy sci-fi. This is the movie Dark Star. John Carpenter's first. Dan O'Bannon's first. And yeah, I'm not going to say too much about it because I actually recorded a good long conversation with Vanimond where we really, really got into it. You'll probably hear that in the next episode, not this one, along with some other stuff. But in the meantime, in this episode, we have lots of stuff from lots of people. You know, all 8 of us who are still listening to Deadpan. But anyway, I want to thank you all for contributing. And if you have something to say about Dark Star, well, it's not too late. Get it to me. And next week, episode number 178, will be part 2. I think it's going to be part 2 of 2. I don't think there will be a Dark Star Palooza part 3. No more going for 6 months on the topic like we did with Flash fucking Gordon. Anyway, terrible special effects and action figures surfing through the atmosphere and spoilers for the movie Dark Star all lie directly ahead. Let's get right into it.
Sorry to interrupt your recreation, fellows, but it is time for Sergeant Pinback to feed the aliens.
Oh, I don't want to do that.
Hey, Jack, fellow Deadpanites, Curtin St. George. About Dark Star, it's obviously a student film with a few extra scenes tacked on, so it's really, really rough to watch. But overall, I like this movie. I'm a big Star Trek fan, and this movie is definitely the anti-Star Trek. Instead of boldly going where no man has gone before, they're on a 20-year mission that only a bureaucrat could have designed. Instead of being these near-perfect characters that we saw on, well, particularly Star Trek Next Gen, everyone in the crew is just going through the motions trying to get the job done. They're bored, morose, and they don't like each other. And I love Pinback, who was played by Dan O'Bannon, going, "Last week was my birthday, and no one said happy birthday to me. One day they'll be sorry." That whole sequence was great. The final scenes with the talking bomb appeared to be a parody of Star Trek as well. You know episodes from the original Trek where Captain Kirk would talk the mad computer into self-destructing before it committed more mischief? Of course, it didn't quite work out that way in the movie. So overall, even though the movie is kind of tough to watch because of the cheapness of the production values, and the plot is a bit thin, there's still enough to recommend it. Oh yeah, one thing I wanted to add. A couple of years ago, I was in a used bookstore, and I found the novelization of Dark Star. It was done by Alan Dean Foster. And it feels more complete as a novel than the film, and it doesn't have that cheap feel to it. I'm guessing that's because my imagination has better production values than the original movie did. So if you run across it somewhere, I'd grab a copy. It's definitely a good read.
Dark Star. That's no moon.
Hello, this is the Energizer Bunny with...
Her husband, John.
You used your real name. That's fine. They call you Mr. Bunny on the pen.
No. Should we start again?
No, there's no editing in deadpan.
Okay.
I told you that. You're also hubby. When I refer to you, you're hubby.
Okay.
We watched Dark Star last night, so we thought we would discuss it. Do you want to open with anything, or do you just want to go by the notes I wrote?
Well, Dark Star was a movie that I had heard of when I was a kid as a bit of a cult classic, but I never got a chance to watch until yesterday, actually, even though I knew there were some famous people involved with John Carpenter as director and Dan O'Bannon as the writer, and certainly I really enjoyed his later films, writing Alien, and I think he wrote the third Alien in AVP. And Carpenter's movies, of course, I always really enjoyed. So I was quite anxious to watch this, actually, when I heard about it.
Whereas I had never heard of it until now.
Oh, okay.
We did do a little bit of research before we watched it. We know, like, originally this was actually a 45-minute student film.
Right. Yeah, and it got expanded to a little bit longer, although it definitely feels very much like a student film. Even in its, further special edition cut versions or whatever you want to call them.
Yeah, because you could see the cutting, the way it was cut. It was quite jarring sometimes when it cut from scene to scene. You're like, oh, is this an error in our video? Or
yeah, and it was obviously a labor of love. These weren't professional actors. These were students that were putting stuff together for the love of doing it.
Yeah. So we watched the special edition cut version on the DVD, but the menu on the DVD wasn't totally clear because they also said you could watch an uncut version. I'm like,
right, so we'll have to go back and watch that, and then we can make a comparison between the two.
We are?
No.
Okay. Really? I didn't know that. So let's discuss some of the things that were actually in the movie.
Right.
Like, what did you think of their little mascot?
Oh, the alien? Oh, I loved him. I thought he was absolutely wonderful. For one thing, he brought comic relief, and it was genuinely funny when he's tapping with his little claws there a couple of times. That was just burst out hilarious. I thought it was great, and I thought it was extremely inventive. And it shows you what students can do. They took a beach ball, of all things, and they turned it into one of the most interesting characters in the movie.
I liked his little attack, his tickle attack. I would be totally gone if he attacked me like that. I'd be, yes, master, whatever you say, please don't touch me.
Yeah, and I like the fact that really it seemed to both be playing and at the same time kind of mean. So you didn't know whether this thing was trying to kill him or was just playing with him, or a little bit of both.
Yeah, like when he grabbed the broom. But
yeah,
like,
and another slapstick comedy moment that if those moments weren't in there, this movie would have been, well, I don't think as popular.
Which leads to the question, once the elevator came down, why was it randomly going up and down when nobody seemed to be in it?
Well, yeah, and I thought about that too, and I think probably that has to do with maybe a little bit of inexperience too as a writer, because if he just stuck a couple of scenes there with the other actors walking in and out of the elevator, you probably wouldn't even have thought of it. You would have thought, oh yeah, they're just going in and out of the elevator doing whatever it is, and then it wouldn't have been so kind of jarring. But yeah, it did seem very strange that it was randomly going up and down.
Yeah, I half expected when he finally made it into the elevator to see the alien there pushing the buttons to make it hard, but...
Yeah, it's your mind tries to fill up the blanks when you're not sure what's there. So as a filmmaker, I think you'd learn from that kind of a lesson and say, well, how can I make sure that nobody's wondering what's going on with this elevator later on?
Which leads to the question, why do you have to basically blow up the elevator to clean it?
Yeah, and again, I think that was obviously another attempt at comedy. That one didn't quite work so well for me. Or the fact that he just walked out and, you know, he wasn't injured or anything like that, because you're still wondering at that point whether the alien is trying to kill him. And so I thought, oh, maybe that's going to be it. We're going to see this character dead. But they went with sort of a slapstick joke. That one didn't quite work for me.
Consider this next question very carefully. What is your one purpose in life?
I want to rock!
Oh, Dark Star, you're fantastic. See, the thing about Dark Star for the Palooza is it's actually a good film, and that's really fantastic that you've picked this. It's hilarious. It's a good film. It's 70s kitsch. Sir, the planet has exploded, sir. It's brilliant.
Hello, this is Retro, and here is my review of Dark Star. Dark Star is an interesting, but severely flawed satire of 2001 by John Carpenter. Where to begin? Inflatable aliens? Ship sound effects generated on the fly vocally? I believe if you're not aware that this is a satire of 2001, then you will find most of the humor flat. The movie is in dire need of an edit, as there are long stretches of dead air and jokes that carry on way past the point of amusement. Scenes that come to mind would include the crew in their quarters blathering on about their boring lives. The point that they have become apathetic from the 20-year journey in space is made quite clear in the first 5 minutes of the scene. To continue further only breeds apathy from the viewer. The other sequence I feel that needs to be cut down is Pinback's interaction with the alien beach ball. There are some funny moments that occur, such as when Pinback is accosted in the elevator shaft, but once the main joke is sprung, I was yearning for something new. The best parts occur during the final 15 minutes of the movie. The dialogue between Lieutenant Doolittle and the bomb is quite inspired, as is the dialogue between Doolittle and Talby contemplating their impending deaths. One of the interesting things I noticed during the film was a striking similarity of Doolittle surfing to the unstable planet's surface and the first scene of the movie Heavy Metal, where the classic Corvette convertible descends through Earth's atmosphere from outer space. A quick check from Wikipedia confirms that John Carpenter's co-producer and star, Dan O'Bannon, wrote both sequences. One of the odd things about this film is, although the crew quarters feature pornographic photos taped to the wall, Dark Star still managed to get a G rating. Perhaps the ratings board felt that any minors watching would be too sleepy to notice.
Don't give me any of that intelligent life stuff. Find me something I can blow up.
The movie obviously had a 70s feel to it. I mean, there's the one scene where the guy in suntanning wearing those cool, huge sunglasses.
Right.
And everybody was smoking in the movie. Not, well, the one character, anyways, was smoking... Obviously, you know, in the cockpit of the, which I don't think they ever did during real space flight.
Right, yeah, there's a couple of scenes where smoking is happening, and that is a bit jarring now. It probably wasn't something they thought about as much when making a film in the 70s, because let's face it, so many people smoked, and it wasn't uncommon to see that. Now, smoking is wrapped up with the idea of being the bad guy, so it's probably confusing to younger viewers as to what's going on there.
And what did you think of the dead captain that survived at the end?
I thought that was very interesting, and I, from what I've read about the film, too, there was a bit of a nod to the Philip K. Dick type of stories. It was strange, but it was also his coffin there with the ice was one of the better visual effects, too. It looked really creepy and very, very strange. It kind of added a little bit more depth than I was expecting from the film, although it did it in kind of a clunky way. But again, that's probably the influence of so much of the science fiction that they're making, you know, comment to throughout the film, that you get these sort of flashes of brilliance, sort of the same way at the end there where they're drifting away from each other and talking to each other, which is, again, taken straight out of science fiction stories.
Yeah, and as you said, the special effects were better, because you could see on some scenes, like, there's a muffin tin used on his chest plate,
right,
and ice cube trays for buttons in the cockpit.
Which I thought was very effective.
Oh, yeah, it worked well. I mean, according to the research I did, the film was only done for $60,000, so that's nothing even back then.
Yeah, and that's, I think, those are the skills that they actually take then into the professional world, and a lot of these guys are using stuff that is recycled and on the cheap, especially in the special effects or in the props realm, I guess. And we would be very surprised to find out how props are built quite often. And so they're cutting their teeth on this.
What do you think of the idea of semi-sentient bombs?
Yeah, again, that was a little weird, although it certainly added to part of the humor and again made for some thought-provoking idea of artificial intelligence, although why you would do that with a bomb does strike me as a bit weird. But, you know, again, this film was sort of a mishmash of ideas from science fiction. These were obviously people who enjoyed reading and talking about ideas in science fiction, and so they used this movie is sort of a playground to explore some of these ideas, even though this seems very, very odd.
Well, yeah, and at the end, at least I thought, the bomb ended up with a bit of a god complex. He's going through all these, do I exist? Are the people around me real or not? And then at the end, he goes, let there be light, and explodes. So I'm like, so does that mean he thinks he's going to be creating reality, the universe, or...
Right. So, yeah, and again, you get this idea in science fiction where artificial intelligence then gets wrapped up with ideas of philosophy and theology, and thus confuses the artificial intelligence with these other ideas. So, kind of pretty deep on the one hand, but also then useful for blowing up the ship.
Yes. Well, like, my favorite short story is Asimov's... The Last Question, which is the same idea. They ask the question, what next? And the computer goes through life and until there's no life, period, in the universe, and it goes, let there be light, and restarts life. So it's a similar idea.
Sure. So, you know, this is a kind of film which on the surface seems very silly, but it touches on some very interesting ideas that are presented in science fiction. Like I said, these are guys that obviously enjoy the genre and we're having fun with it, obviously, but also exploring some deeper ideas. You know, you can only do so much in a short film, student type film.
Hey guys, how could it live? It was just filled with gas.
Nipple.
My nipple.
So I received a few greasy transmissions from the greasy inhabitants of the greasy ship Dark Star, way out there in deep, greasy space, with a 10-year time lag. Now, most of these messages are garbled, but I've tried to make as much sense of them as I possibly could. You know, we had quite the skeleton crew last week, and I think it shows. So the first comment of the week, the first transmission of the week, from Vanamond reads, "A rock star ate my hamster." Which makes very little sense, even if you assume that by rock star, he'd actually meant to say dark star. A dark star eat my hamster is really just as bizarre, even if you play it on the Commodore VIC-20. The next transmission is from Johnny Null, who says, Nobody, Whore, and Grimlock are easily my favorite two bumpers, and plus one for Jack's rants for sure. Again, this is difficult to decipher. By Nobody, Whore, he may have been lamenting the fact that he needed sexual relief and that the Dark Starship's only female presence was the computer voice. His reference to Grimlock could indicate a run-in with some Transformers. I just wonder if their smart bombs would work against Unicron. His reference to Jack's rants must be about one of the obscenity-deleted censored rants from some crewman on Dark Star named Jack. The Energizer Bunny says, Even in the belief system, there's an error with that strip. The little girl says Jesus created man and animals. If I remember my Bible correctly, she's wrong. His father did. I believe the Energizer Bunny is actually one of the Dark Star's intelligent bombs, or maybe bombshells, trying to comprehend conflicting dogmatic religious assertions. The next is from Ensign Used Hair, clearly in the throes of space dementia. Used Hair says, Hindenburg hoop-de-doo? In the final transmission, a crewman named Justa Joe attempts to transition into an equally quirky but somewhat higher-budget science fiction film. He says, I'm considering The Fifth Element for tonight. Somehow, I've never seen it. Oh, no, wait, there's one more. Espy says, C:, grilling pork chops and hanging with my girls. Which I can only assume means she's sucking pork-flavored blue juice from tiny plastic soy sauce packets and looking at blurred-out pictures of naked women hung on the cabin walls. Sad, really. I'd recommend that this crew get some kind of novelty item to afford them some much-needed recreation time. Something like, I don't know, maybe a beach ball.
Blowing up planets. So easy, even a caveman can do it.
Hyperdrive sequence begun. Hit it, Pinback.
Brace for force field.
And speaking of fun with it, that ending.
Yeah.
He becomes a surfer. Once a surfer, always a surfer.
Yeah. I'm not quite sure what to make of that. Although, yeah, it does tie things up. So he had that big rambling speech in that viewer port thing about how he was a surfer and loved to surf. And so then at the ending, you see that. So I'm sure that's a method of filmmaking where you're tying it all together. So you have foreshadowing at the beginning, and then at the end where he actually gets to do the surfing, it all, you know, comes together. So yeah, that's probably the sort of things that they learned in film school and were applying in their project. So, you know, in that sense, it makes sense.
And actually, something else I just thought about, Pinback, who said he wasn't really an astronaut and he accidentally ended up as the astronaut.
Right.
Like, I read somewhere that there was a possibility that may not be true. It was more cabin fever, and he was coming up with these stories during my research. I don't know where I'm going with this, but it's...
I don't know. I'm sure that this film has been discussed so much, I think, by so many people that sometimes it might get a little overly complex. And who knows, in O'Bannon's writing, or even in different versions or different cuts of the movie, we might have seen different explorations of that. So, I don't think it's important to really go too deeply as to the motivation of Pinback, but interesting stuff. And it was neat also to see Dan O'Bannon as an actor as well. I don't know if he's...
The fuzzy 70-haired...
Yeah, well...
Look, they all had the fuzzy beard and the...
Yeah, which again then sort of takes you out of the moment. Back in the 70s, this was probably considered kind of gritty looking. Now it just seems very odd looking.
Well, I'm sure they were thinking they spent years, and obviously they didn't have shaving material and hair products, so the beard's grown and...
Yeah, well, that's probably true enough, although it was, that's probably convenient because I bet you they all did look like that back in the 70s.
So final thoughts. What did you think?
Well, as a science fiction fan, I definitely really enjoyed it, and I enjoyed seeing where some of the creative ideas came from for these people I'd heard of. But it's not as accessible if you're not as interested in that. You know, it is a student film, and explores ideas that they're specifically interested in. So if you don't share those ideas, it's probably very confusing and odd. But for, you know, the geeky people out there, I'm sure this is quite a delight to watch.
Well, I enjoyed it. It was kind of low-budget silliness, fun, you know, nothing to be taken seriously, but, you know, fun to laugh at with.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so this is the Energizer Bunny, and...
And her husband.
Mr. Bunny. Wait, don't leave. I said I was going to try to get you to do something.
Okay.
The motto of Deadpan is, Deadpan is the motherfucking way.
That's kind of rude.
So now you have to say that, too.
Can I edit it?
Nope.
Right. Deadpan is the motherfucking way.
Woohoo! Love you.
Love you, too.
Thanks, Deadpan.
When I brought you on the ship, I thought you were cute.
All right, thank you very much, everyone. And how about that deadpan debut for Mr. Bunny, who probably far prefers the AKA John, or even Hubby. But anyway, that's great stuff, and I actually still have some stuff, some Dark Star-related stuff lined up for the very next episode, and I didn't actually intend to do it this way, but some of the more negative feedback will accompany my conversation with Van in next week's episode. Stuff from Just a Joe, and Ed from Texas, and hey, possibly you. Feel free to get me your thoughts about Dark Star. You can email them to me. My email address is sphericaljackm@gmail.com, or call the voicemail. It's 206-350-TOMI, 206-350-8664. That is also the way to send me other stuff, like the contents of your refrigerator, or a funny, dumbass mistake you've made in your life, or, you know, whatever. Stuff we've been doing here since 2006. Some quick house cleaning and, you know, bulletin board type stuff. I will be sending out your 60 lines comments very soon if you've not received them already. So hopefully we'll get that going somewhat soon. And we do have yet another project beyond that in the wings and a couple of other ideas. I should also let you know that my story, The Lighthouse Keeper, which is actually written in the world created by P.G. Holyfield for Murder at Avedon Hill, is starting his second season of The Tales of the Children. And I'm told that that's going to drop in early October, possibly October 10th. So keep your eyes and more your ears peeled for that. Looking forward to hearing what he does with it. And in that vein, I actually have a story set to appear in the upcoming 2020 Visions anthology, edited by Rick Novi and Christopher Fletcher of M-Brain SF, as well as something in Opus 2 of Theme and Variations, edited by Michelle M. Welch. And you heard the promo at the top of this episode, and actually that's Michelle M. Welch on viola, and yours truly doing the guitar shredding work there. And I do believe that covers everything you need to know. And I hope that this episode has been fun and amusing, even if you didn't like the movie Dark Star or couldn't make it through it or have yet to see it. I'll make one more Dark Star comment and then take us out with some music. If you have the DVD still in your possession, you should actually go to the extras and watch the trailer. For anyone who's seen this movie or listened to this episode of Deadpan realizes that this was just bizarre satire and just kind of trippy comedy. The trailer actually that was released in the theaters in the 70s tries to portray this as a tense drama in space. The way they cut the ridiculous scenes in the elevator shaft, they try to make it look like this is high tension James Bond type of stuff. And anyway, next week you will hear a lot more of my opinion as well as Vandemons and Just a Joe's and Ed from Texas's and maybe more. All right, enough rambling, enough repeating. Not coming back after the music. Good night, Beach Ball. No, that's not it.
Now it's time to go sleepy by, you worthless piece of garbage. Patu, Barada, Nikto.
Enough!
Patu, Barada, Nikto. Say these words.
You are number six.
Say these words.
You are false data. Therefore, I shall ignore you.
Enough is enough!
Barada, Nikto, Patu, Barada, Nikto. Patu, Barada, Nikto.
Let there be light.